This is the most exciting blockchain project in China that's not Sato.
Yes, the most exciting other one that's not.
Yes.
Welcome to the Sato Social. I'm David.
And I'm Richard.
And if this is your first time listening, we are a podcast about blockchain tech coming out of China.
Yep, Beijing-based, and we're really all about introducing China, Chinese blockchain, news, information projects, and getting people to know what we see and love about China and what's going on here.
Yeah, unless the projects are from Shanghai, just kidding. We like these too.
Even but, Shanghai projects.
We've got our first guest is Amy Chen from Cortex.
Yep.
And Amy, you guys are a really, really interesting idea and a really interesting project. Do you want to just take a moment and kind of tell us what Cortex is?
Sure. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me here. So what Cortex is that we are a new public chain that allows AI models to be stored on blockchain, and then the smart contract can use these AI models and then make it into an AI smart contract.
We got to wind this back because you know what you're talking about.
Right.
And we kind of know what you're talking about.
Right.
So it's things like using a lot of photo images and stuff to train a machine to recognize a cat. Right.
Yes, like models, like trained. So already trained models. You know how like you have all these data sets and then you use those to train a model?
Yeah.
And then after that model is being trained, then you use that trained model for inference.
And you guys are we in the building the model stage.
We're building this blockchain, the public blockchain that allows model to be stored on chain.
Okay.
And so smart contract can have AI functions in it.
Right. So I interact with it like a financial smart contract on ETH might manage a mortgage. I can ask AI smart contracts on the Cortex chain for, is this a cat? So if there's a trained model that can recognize cats, I might ask it for an interpretation
to say. Right, because you have many kinds of model that does different functions.
We're so, running with cat recognition.
Right, so,
podcast.
Right, it's, yeah, cat.
It's something we feel good about because it's one of the places we're better than AI for the moment, I think. I'm pretty confident I know a cat when I see one. So.
Right, but like what AI is at the moment is it helps you to do things faster and more, you know, in a more efficient way. It's not like we cannot recognize a cat. It's that
it knows the platonic form of the cat.
Right. Yeah. Or like if you were to, you know, scan through a series of, you know, pictures, it helps you, you know, expedite the process.
Yeah. I presume you could use it to do things like, say, creditworthiness. So if you're checking, you could check some data points that people collect and say, should this person get a credit card?
Yes, that can be one of a very useful user case you see on our chain.
This is actually really, I want to talk more about Cortex now and less about China. So let's,
thank you. I mean, I'll take that as a compliment.
let's put the China stuff on hold. So
we haven't gotten to the China part. That was just a very first question. First part of the first question.
This is good. You see, I thought what you guys were doing was slightly different. So what you're doing is you're basically a blockchain that's specialized to help people monetize AI models.
No. So you can see Cortex as an AI-enabled Ethereum.
You're going to explain that to us now, I hope.
I'm imagining that, but I could do with some help.
Okay, so the current Ethereum network, the current smart contract that runs on the Ethereum network does not have the ability to execute AI functions. CPU does not have enough computing power to execute anything complicated.
It's a long way off that complexity.
When we talk about AI functions, are we talking about back propagation for training models, or are we talking about like we've got the cat recognition model somewhere and it's just a matter of getting
the inference result? So the model, again, the model is trained already, and then you're just asking, you're just, you know, in your smart contract, you know, smart contracts that if all these conditions are met, the payment will go through, right? That's the smart contract, that's the logic behind the smart contract.
So, So the smart contracts that are going to go on Cortex are not just AI smart contracts. They're also normal ones that just want to interact with a with an AI model.
Yes, we're just would enable the AI part of the smart contract. So once we get online, then you'll be able to have in your smart contract or your D app, you have AI functions in it. So say that face recognition is a type of AI, cat recognitions, voice recognitions, fingerprints, you know, all these AI models. And when a D app developers want to use them, they can use that smart contract directly on chain. So everything, including the contract, the data, everything is on chain. It's in, you know, public verifiable.
I mean, I can see a lot of space there for useful things in terms of, because you've got the chain there, you know, people could apply for their own validation. If we go back to my example, I could ask for a credit rating for myself and I can prove that I got the result I got because it's on the blockchain. Is that the kind of thing?
Yes. That's a very good example.
Yeah.
So I imagine that, you know, the credit report that runs on the Cortex blockchain, what will happen is that, say you have all the transactional data from a decentralized exchange. And then so all the transactional data is on chain. It's all public. It's you don't know who it is, but it's anonymous, but you know, that's right. And you can then use those transactional data and then you can write a D app saying that if this certain wallet or a certain address wants to ask for like a loan or like a credit report, then you can use these transactional data and then put it in an AI smart contract that was verified by an AI models. And that, and not to mention that AI models is also stored on chain. So everything is public and transparent.
So you guys are thinking about this. Your use cases mostly are...
No, that was just one of the examples that can be used. Like what we're trying to do is we're not trying to come up with super cool or super useful D apps or models yet. Right now, our job is to make sure that we build a functional blockchain for AI as an industry to grow in a decentralized way. Because if you look at... AI in nature is a very centralized thing because all the data, all these resources are controlled by big corporations. And then it's like a black box, right? Nobody knows what data they use to train the model and then what kind of model it is. And then for the inference result, it was kept in a black box.
Yeah.
There are some people that say, utility blockchains, you know, they're not useful, all of this stuff. You know, we've heard people say that. Yeah. What I'm interested in is you're talking about something that actually is going to change the way an entire industry organizes itself and can practice. I mean, how does Cortex or AI on a blockchain actually change this centralized structure? Is there something that is going to enable small developers to be putting out these models? Or are we going to have big companies just... like all of a sudden Google will open its models because it's got a revenue source for them.
We are just this platform provider. Once this platform is up and running, then we can accommodate on one side AI model providers. So those are independent AI model programmers. We will encourage them to join our ecosystem by submitting their trained model. So, I mean, having a good facial recognition model is not that hard. But then it will close the gap between, like, you know, the AI technology and the normal public user by encouraging independent developers to submit their models on it. And then independent D app or smart contract developers then will be able to have easy access. Publicly easy access, safe, transparent way to use this model, right? So we're just giving this platform.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds really great to me. I hadn't seen that in what you were doing from sort of what I'd read about the project, etc. But I mean, that really to me seems positively in the spirit of decentralizing things, like we hear about decentralized advertising and other sort of industry disrupting things where people are looking at saying, well, let's get the user back in charge of their data and in charge of their life, and let's break down the barriers to entry so that we're not having these like 4 or 5 or 10 mega companies controlling the landscape.
Or telling you, indirectly telling you what this industry or technology should go. You
know? I mean, for me, certainly if I'm going to have my face recognized, I'd rather be submitting it myself and knowing who I'm sending the result to than have that, like you say, black box behind a scene where I just get told you can come in or you can't or whatever the result determines.
It's the inference result that we're democratizing the AI models and furthermore the inference result, because the inference result is what's important. Is this face that face? Yes or no? That's the inference result. That's the reason you train the model. You want to know if this face is that face, right? Or if this is a cat or not? Yes or no?
Yeah, so cat, that yes cat or examples.
Yeah.
Cat, I'm sorry, I took this to finance. cat examples way better.
Cool. I mean, one of the things you said earlier is you said that Cortex. You guys are obviously you're saying you're designed for more performance than you're going to get on Ethereum. Can you talk a bit about scalability?
Right.
Do you guys have an angle on this?
We do care about that, but that is not our strength, because our problem is to democratize AI and then make sure that AI models can be successfully running in a decentralized way on blockchain. Mm. There are other great teams, projects that focus on their technology focus is, you know, specifically on solving the scalability problem. So once they've done their job and then it's tested and all that, and then made it public, open source, then we will have partnership or make accommodation to that resolved solution.
Yep, I think
on that question.
You want to talk about China? We want to go more into
That's what I was thinking. Maybe if we pivot a little bit to the projects.
Yeah, maybe the origin story, because those are always
kind of
interesting.
How did Cortex start? How did it get its...
That is over. You know,
just
I'm not
came
the
into existence.
Well, do the founders have different stories? This is.
Do we know who the founders are?
Right. Okay, so we started, officially we started in March of 2018. Oh, no, wait, in February 2018. We kicked off the project. So what happened is that we did our first and only round of private placement back in February this year.
Are you guys coming out of an academic project or are the people that are doing this, is there sort of a corporate background in AI or?
So let's talk about the co-founders a little bit. Ziqi Chen and Tian Jia, they are the co-founders of this project, the Cortex project. And Ziqi has a few years experience in mining and in cryptocurrency. These are these two guys are, you know, veterans in the cryptocurrency world. And Tian Jia is actually one of the very first Chinese men, or I should say students, back in 2011. He started to mine Bitcoin, and then he studied a distributed system.
You know where they were? Were they here in Beijing?
Yes.
Mm. Okay.
Okay.
Tsinghua.
Good
Tsinghua. They're all Tsinghua alumni. And then Tian Jia studied distributed system in school, and then Ziqi has machine learning backgrounds. And then after they graduated, Ziqi did the mining pool business and digital wallet business, and Tian Jia is quite famous in the crypto world in China, because he pretty much knows everybody, and then he's very well connected, and then he's also one of the early equity investors of BPhoenix.
Right.
So we're a group of Bitcoin veterans who believe the core values of blockchain.
So the Tsinghua Mafia.
Yeah.
Remember we...
Right, Mafia.
Not a real Mafia, just in case...
No, it's China.
Mafia in a good way.
There is no Mafia in China.
No.
If the government is listening,
that's not what
we're saying.
No.
We just mean a closely knit group of friends and family who may or may not control an industry through skill.
Okay. It's really funny that, I mean, in comparison to Beijing University, there are so many Tsinghua alumni in the industry than Beijing University.
Yeah.
I think the ratio was like 20 to 1. It was,
the blockchain group, the big one is the Tsinghua blockchain.
Yeah, there is Tsinghua blockchain.
We don't know anyone at Beida who is blockchain.
No.
Is it because I think Tsinghua has a very strong engineering faculty?
I think it's also the maybe just the old... applied theoretical split where Baydar's the theory and kind of...
I'm also wondering if it's the China thing where now that there's this buzz about blockchain, because it's technical, Tsinghua has given the funds and decided that it wants to do this.
Yeah.
Because I know like when Jake...
Jake Smith.
I think it was more of a Baydar sort of thing.
Yeah.
But Tsinghua has its own, obviously, officially funded digital currency research department or center. Yeah.
Well, they also have the Internet and Network Study Center, which is a whole building which has its own model networks and huge amounts of routing capacity and things to do.
Our podcast is going to become gossiping about China.
Yeah, oh my God,
gossiping about
it.
Chinese crypto people.
Who
in
knows
English.
Who?
I think that's a very good show to have. Right?
There's a lot of material.
Yes. It's going to be juicy.
Listen, who ate who and why?
Yeah. Which fork caused which founder to leave which project?
You know, I think that will come out over the course of the show. But, as people who are connected in China, it's super easy to raise capital. Can we ask the details?
Oh, yeah, of course. So we, as I mentioned earlier, we only had one round of private placement. And then that went very fast. We totally raised 40,000 Ether back in that month time frame. So, you know, it was, you know, we closed it March the 15th.
A lot of wampum.
Yes.
Yeah, so a total of 40,000 Ether at a rate of 1 Ether, 1 to 1,500. You know, so 1 Ether in exchange for a 1,500 Cortex token.
Mm.
So that's
it's less money now. But
way less. No, but we're good.
You
we're
sold
good.
It right. all immediately, right?
That I don't but I'm not sure.
if your founders have equity stakes in Bitfinex, I think there's perhaps some background.
Well, I mean, a Tsinghua background as well. You guys shouldn't have any issues. What we didn't know is you're from New York, a Canadian who went down to New York.
A Taiwanese.
Taiwanese-Canadian, New York.
Right.
And you were sucked into the blockchain world here. Mm-hmm. How did this happen for you?
Right.
They really feel like they're worlds apart. We talk to people in the West and they have no idea what's going on here.
Or they have really misguided, possibly quite negative opinions. Mm-hmm. Oh, China's scam central or whatever. Yeah. And they haven't really got a sense of the real projects that are going on.
Right.
Yeah, it's mostly Scam Central, but...
I was going to say that, but then I feel I shouldn't because I'm still here. But, right. So I think there are two things that are... Maybe I can share a little more thoughts. One is that the Scam Central thing is because I think it's just the way people do things, the mentality of people, the people in this land do things a little very differently from the Western world. And then it's just the way they quote unquote promote themselves would misguide people to think that it's a scam. You know, I don't know if it make any sense to you guys. Yeah. Like, do you understand what I mean? It was just the way they just don't know how to take things easy.
Well, I think
it's a culture thing, you know, because it's so competitive here. It's so overly.
One thing I do see in China, trying to flesh that out a bit, is I think things that wouldn't be acceptable in other places, like we haven't thought the end game out completely. We haven't got everything in place yet.
Right, but then they started.
Is much more acceptable.
So yeah.
Yes.
We'll get this going, and don't worry, we'll sort you out.
Yeah.
Is a much more acceptable business practice, I think, just generally.
Exactly.
And more suitable often because you have to move quickly, and if you want to offer people anything, you have to get going.
Yeah. I'm also wondering if it's a result of the, like, just the liquidity boom and the ease of financing that's driven by the fact that Chinese money can't effectively get out of the country. So, you know, maybe it's easier for people to think, well, here's a project, I'll put some money into it because it's more likely to lead somewhere.
At the end of the day, it's tolerance for risk. They don't, you know, I mean, everybody's tolerance for risk. I mean, sometimes if we think it's risky, they don't think it's in their eye. They're like, oh, it's nothing.
I mean, it could also be that they're just tired of owning like 20 houses.
Yeah.
Maybe. Right?
Like, when you've got 20 houses, what are you?
Or they're just greedy.
Yes. Getting back to the real projects that are going on here. And the ones
I've got a question I'd love to sneak in, which is, The people we've been dealing with are not in sort of the Tsinghua group. So we're kind of coming from outside of academia. And one of the things is that also distances us from really I don't want to say insider knowledge of what the Chinese government is doing, but it sounds like your project is much more at that nexus. And there's a bunch of crypto people that I don't want to say like government outsiders, but they don't necessarily come from Tsinghua, or they don't necessarily come from Beida. And do you guys have a sense of, I mean, is your project, do you feel that you are, I don't want to say embraced by the Chinese government, but like, is this a thing where you think, well, inside versus outside,
like
we're more on the inside?
In that sense, I understand. So we pretty much hit the two hot buzzword, you know, in today's world. So the AI and blockchain, right? Uh-huh. And then, but because we have the practical value, so that kind of, in a sense, made us a little insights to that sense. But it's not because we have very strong governmental, you know, like the personal level relationship, for sake. It's not that, I would say. Because, I mean, blockchain is a very, you know, that the central idea is still very against the whole communism, you know, core. So, but it was just that.
We can beep that out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's not the blockchain is very pro-China.
Yeah. It's very,
for those of you listening.
Right, well, where was that?
Not just the microphones, so, the other microphones.
I think maybe like decentralization is at times at odds with regulation in China as a software.
Well, I mean, it's complex, right? Yeah. Because we, like, you're talking about February, and then there was April and May. Mm. And sometime around that, we had that huge push with a government fund, I think, in Shenzhen.
Yep.
And there was a government fund in Hangzhou.
But Shenzhen was a sandbox.
Right. Yeah, I mean, sandbox or not, it's like a snake with 10 heads, and, you know, and like, you know, two of them are trying to eat you and eight of them are like, come in, I want a hug, you know, let me stroke your face. Yeah. And like, it's kind of a schizophrenic industry because there's a lot of promise, but people are also treading very carefully. You know, like you'll see companies put on conferences and they're thinking very carefully about like, what projects do we put on because we want to look good as an industry.
Right.
So I guess that's basically what I was asking. I mean, because, you know, like the Tsinghua graduate thing, long-time crypto, AI blockchain, you guys are much more, you're in a flagship space rhetorically and brand-wise, right? Like it's easier for you guys, or maybe it's easy to be positioned as like, we are a really innovative project coming out of China.
Right. Yeah, I think that's very true, and thanks for all the good words that just said that we are literally just a group of hardcore engineers. We spend less time try to promote ourselves because it's more important for us to literally deliver what we promise, what we can deliver, because we have in a almost a bad way that we have engineering pride. And even like, I'm in charge of our operation team. I have an electrical engineering background. I did electrical engineering in Queens, and then I did my electrical engineering master's in Columbia. That's how I ended up in New York. And then more than half of our operation members, they have IT or engineering backgrounds. So we have, I mean, logically, it's just, you know, we are a very engineering-oriented solution providing team to try to really do what we think we can do and make change of it.
So I mean, we're getting back to Tsinghua, but I mean, you guys have some impressive partnerships. I think obviously I can kind of imagine how partnership with Tsinghua worked out, but I mean, Shanghai Jiaotong and then Berkeley and Stanford, how do those partnerships work and how did you sort of get them to happen?
So for public chain like us, it's all about building an ecosystem. And building an ecosystem in human world means that you need to get more users or more people to use you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And then so building ecosystem is a fundamental priority for us. And to kick off this ecosystem building, we need developers. And these universities, and there are more to come, we have a partnership with them in a way that we will give them training computing resources in exchange for their talent.
But one question I have is just really speaking substantively, like one thing we've found reaching out with Sado is that people really have no idea what's going on here. How did you guys actually just practically reach out? Because are people working through Tsinghua Dasha, or is it that, you know, a big project that's raised a lot of funds, you've got people proactively contacting Berkeley, proactively contacting Stanford? I mean, is there, like, how do you guys, do you have any advice maybe for other projects in China like ours that need to cut through the ice and get people in the West to understand what's happening here?
So the partnership with Tsinghua Dasha, or the connection with Tsinghua Dasha, I guess faculty, is not a very hard thing for us to do, because I would say more than 50% of our in-house engineers graduated from Tsinghua Dasha. So they have their, you know, their professors when they were in schools, and they were in good relationship. And then obviously professors wanted to, you know, you always keep this good, you know, bridge between your schools, right?
And then so it's leveraging the connections in Chinese academia as the bridge to Western academia.
He did his master's in machine learning in the United States. And then he also worked, after he graduated, he also worked in Silicon Valley for a few years. Hmm. So he has his connection there while he was, you know, he lived in the U.S. Hmm. So that's why, and then you know how, like, we thought this through, and then we make sure that we have enough support from everywhere before we kick off our project. Meaning that, you know, when we give allocations in our private funds, we didn't only ask for your money. We only asked for, like, if there's any additional value you can bring in helping us grow. Hmm. Right. And then so part of that additional value would be these academic connections.
Firstborn children,
right.
Blood donations. It sounds like what you're saying is that the most effective ways you guys have found to engage with people outside China is through personal connections. And that's where Chinese academia comes in. It sounds like the academic connections are way more important to you guys as engineers than anything with government. How have you found your project engaging with people outside of academia? I mean, do you have Western VCs that are kind of, you know, contacting you? Are there any other forms of engagement that you've found maybe either really challenging or that are weirdly easy?
Mm, okay. I think we are having a hard time engaging Western users. To engage a Western community. And one thing is, I guess this is a mentality, again, it has to go back to the culture and the mentality thing.
Yeah.
Because in China, when you portray or you showcase your project, you talk about a future, you talk about how much growth it has. I mean, that's the number one thing. I'm not embarrassed to say that. Most of our Chinese retail investors, they probably don't have a clue about what we are, like what we do, or what kind of a real engineering solution we're providing in it. You know, it's just that, in that sense, it's a mentality thing. Like the Chinese investor, they seem to care less about what you are. But the Western world is more practical. And then that part of the community engagement cannot happen until we actually have something to show. Hmm. As you know, like a cryptocurrency company like us, you have a white paper and then you ask for money and then you start building. So the first 6 months is actually very, very tough for us trying to promote ourselves in the Western world, because we have nothing to show. Mm. I hope that answers the question. It's just the Western people, they're very practical and they want to see the real thing. I mean, they maybe are aware of your existence, but they will not really show their support until they know more about you. And then when I say they know more about you, is that you show you open source or you have more things to...
I think our experience is that it's easier to have detailed conversations with people in China, but they can often be much more unstructured in terms of what comes out of them. And engaging with people in the West, people are more structured from the beginning, but they also don't really spend the time to kind of experimentally try to figure out what's happening.
Really?
It might also be just us, but...
We're also quite pro-Chinese investors because we got face-to-face time with them, but we had... I mean, in the end, everyone who came in on our raise was someone we met with and had time to get them through what we were trying to achieve and to understand us at a core.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose the question for me is if there is that difference and you're saying Chinese investors will come in earlier, is that just the difference of because of that risk appetite you were talking about? Or is it they're judging things slightly differently? Do they have a different way of judging if they're not looking for that, like you say, that thing, the completed object to look at?
Yeah.
Do they have another way of judging the project and whether they'll get involved?
The Chinese investors?
Yeah.
They do, but I guess the Chinese investors, retail investors, they do less due diligence than the Western retail investors.
I mean, when you say things like private placement also, is this code word for ICO but don't sue us? Or this is like you're meeting with the people that are going to invest face-to-face and...
Yes.
Yeah.
So we didn't do it publicly. So we didn't have like a public way of fundraise.
Yeah.
So it's just that
Safe in this room.
Yes. Yes.
Just before we move on, I guess you said that in terms of engaging with people in the English speaking world, when are you guys going to have testnet up and when can people actually play with what you're doing?
Okay. So the testnet's actually up, but then it's, we don't think it's enough to just have the testnet on because the testnet, like, it doesn't really mean anything. You can see all the blocks are moving and whatnot, and you can see, you know, a few AI models are being uploaded and stored on chain, and you can see, you can test things out, but it's not that intuitive yet. So we're actually in making the world's very first AI dApps. It's going to be like a little game, like Pixel Master, but at the end, we let the AI model, it's called MNEST. It's a model that recognizes number. So it get if you feed like a picture of a number to this model, it tells you which number, like from 0 to 9, which number that picture is. So that model is called MNEST model. At the end of the game, we will let the AI to determine what number it is.
So your test app is going to be destroying the CAPTCHA system that is securing the Western internet.
Yes.
Perfect. Because I can never get through those things, and I'll happily pay Cortex tokens.
Yeah, I'm not so sure how I feel about having you in the studio anymore.
No, but the testnet is, because we will not, it's right now we're still ERC-20 token. So everything happens on testnet. It has no monetary value. It's just for the testing purpose.
Yeah.
I've got a question I got to ask you here, because... Well, people probably believe that this podcast is entirely unscripted. In fact, we have a sample question list. And there's question 15, which says, what's it like working with Bitmain? Yeah. And I'm going to ask this, even though you've never said anything about Bitmain, because I'm kind of curious.
That was one, the question I was going to ask
next. One, I guess, are you working with Bitmain? Two... I mean, they're a big company. They're going to IPO. I think they're pretty mysterious to people outside of China, whereas everyone in the crypto space is like, oh, that's Jihan, or oh, you know, let's get Nishant out for beer or something. What's it like working with them?
Okay, so two things. We have not reached any practical partnership with Bitmain. So Bitmain, as of now, is our investor, because Bitmain is one of our lead investors. And then so in that sense, as an investor, Bitmain is super, super great because they have faith in us and then they give us money and then never bothers us. They never bother us. You know, they never ask for it. They're like, you know, where, you know, which...
You might have noticed they're quite busy right now.
Yes. Which, you know, so I mean, in that sense, I mean, they are angel. You know, they're great. And they've been great to us. The other hand, I believe that Bitmain made this investment in a very strategical way where, you know how when AI industry moves forward, it's an effort of a combination of hardware effort and software effort. So we will be entitled to put our app, you know, put our strength in focusing on advancing the software part of that manner. And Bitmain, as everybody knows, they're very good at making hardware solutions, computing solutions. And then so that's something that I foresee to have a great partnership with Bitmain in the future. Because they're in making of AI chips. Yeah. Hmm. So that's something that, you know, people can see in the future.
Yeah, that's cool.
Richard, you got any more questions?
No, actually, that was the one I had lined up next. Because I really did want to know.
I'm genuinely curious. Yeah. They seem a bit... I don't want to use the word disorganized, but it seems that you guys.
Okay.
My impression of Bitmain, like there are some great people there, and there's some people that you just, it's a company that's been built very quickly.
Yes.
So it'll be really interesting to see what happens to them, right? It's like a left hand almost doesn't really know what the right hand's doing.
That happens to every company that grow
We've noticed actually the same thing with Huobi, where you know,
and
we
get
emails from like multiple people who are almost in the same department. They just don't know what they're doing.
And like CoinMarketCap too. You know, this industry is just too crazy. You know, I mean, it moves too fast. Mm-hmm. I think it's way too fast.
I think we need to speed it up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's, off you go. I mean,
more blocks per minute.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an interesting discussion. We can keep asking questions.
Well, I think the one last one I had, and you mentioned before, you know, sort of challenges getting Western, particularly US usage up. How has that been in China domestically, where you're closer to people and there's maybe more connection? How's that going, and what's some wins and
like another thing that I wanted to say, it goes back to a few questions, is that Chinese people also follows KOL, so that's maybe another reason why we think that the English, the Western community seems more like, you know,
I mean,
more have a struggle in it.
Noticed that. I mean, I know a few people in PR in the China sphere, and you have WeChat groups that discuss without the KOL in it, where people get together and they discuss what Ma's been saying or
WeChat,
you know, Wujihan's been saying.
And right.
That's quite different. I think on Twitter you might get people follow a luminary, so they might follow someone in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't just follow a bunch of people on Twitter, and maybe you participate in some chats.
And the thing is, I think Western people use less, they spend less time looking at their phone.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And then Chinese people, they're constantly looking at their phone. Constantly messaging, you know.
Yeah, you have WeChat withdrawal symptoms if you.
Right. It was and maybe that's why, because I mean the information flows way faster in China.
That's why I
need
chopsticks now, so I can keep my phone open with my other hand.
Really?
No.
It's a meme. Fuck you. Sorry.
It's a meme. It's a meme.
I was thinking, wait, you're eating with your phone, and you're like, I use chopsticks. David's an idiot.
No. It's a meme going around the Chinese internet at the moment that this is why Chinese tech is superior.
Yeah, superior because you guys eat with a fork and knife, and then you use chopsticks. So you have a free hand to browse.
Yeah.
Which is very. I think it's true. It's one of the reasons.
Well, let me ask one final question then, which is often an observation I had of our experiences in China, is that there's sort of the Huobi community, there's the Bitmain community, there's like the OKX community, and things circulate really quickly within those communities, and then sometimes you'll kind of reach out and it will infect another community. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of the people that you guys are working with, do you feel most rooted in the Bitmain space? Do you feel most rooted in the Tsinghua space? Do you think that this characterization is totally wrong and you guys are creating your own space?
I think we are creating our new space because we're trying to be very neutral. Because, I mean, that silo perspective, the way I look at it is more like politics. It's similar to the politics, right? So you need to take sides. And that we would not want to get into that situation. And plus, we have our niche. So we're trying to create our own space and then try to grow from there. That's, you know, that's the most organic way to start off. So that's how I
look. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess that's our show. Is there anything you want to close to add about Cortex or ways people who are listening can either reach out to you guys or learn more about what you're doing?
Relatively speaking, we are a very hard to understand project, but we're trying our very best to deliver the message to the public in a easier way.
Have easy to explain animations.
Yes,
right. We have that, and then that didn't really go well because I mean we have this animation made.
Famous Chinese actors and movie stars.
I thought about that, but it's too expensive.
Future famous.
Future famous.
Or they used to be before they were nailed for tax evasion.
No, but we're trying to come up with like, you know, fun interactive DApp games for people to come and test it out, and then so that hopefully people would know more about us or would have more interest in, you know, following us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, well, thank you for coming on. I'm sure we'll come up with a lot of fascinating questions after you guys leave.
Yes, that's like, always the way. But no, it's really great to have you here for the first episode.
So. Perfect. And if you guys are listening, feel free to contact us anytime. I'm David at Sato.tech.
And I'm Richard at Sato.tech.
And if there are projects you want us to interview, people you'd like us to talk to, or questions you want us to ask, send us an email and let us know.
Yeah.
Because we're hoping this becomes a bit of a bridge between projects like ours and yours and people that are in the West who are interested in China but don't know what's happening.
I think this is great because I would, you know, if I were still in New York, I would love to listen to shows like this.
Yeah. So. Well, if we want to talk about silos, I think that's the biggest one of all.
The biggest one, yeah. Yeah, so thank you. And for those of you guys who are listening, thanks for spending some time with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.